Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with today's inauguration of Vladimir Putin, who, after having ruled Russia for the past 12 years, begins a sixth and possibly 12-year term. Joining us from Moscow is Masha Gessen, a Moscow-based journalist and author of several books, including her latest, The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. She is one of the organizers of the demonstrations that took place on Sunday and Monday to protest Putin's fraudulent election and the continuing reversal of freedom, transparency, and the rule of law in Russia. Then we'll examine the fate of a Republican statesman, Senator Richard Lugar, who is about to lose his re-election in Indiana to a Tea Party candidate who is being funded by the Club for Growth and other right-wing super PACs. Marjorie Hershey, a professor of political science at Indiana University in Bloomington, joins us. We will discuss the implications of Senator Lugar's possible defeat by outside money in a campaign that denigrates statesmanship while demanding more conservatism. Then finally, we'll speak with Sister Simone Campbell, the executive director of NETWORK, a Catholic social justice lobby. She was recently criticized by the Pope for promoting radical feminist themes incompatible with the Catholic faith and not pushing church teachings on abortion, contraception, homosexuality, and the male-only priesthood. We will discuss the fate of Obama's healthcare reform that she has championed and Paul Ryan's theology. And joining us now is Masha Gessen, who is a journalist and author of several books. She has contributed to Vanity Fair, The New Republic, Granta, and Slate, among other publications. Masha has served as editor of the Russian language magazine Snob and lives in Moscow. And she's the author of The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. Welcome to Background Briefing, Masha Gessen.
Thank you.
And the inauguration of Vladimir Putin took place today in Moscow with lavish ceremonies and followed by an even more lavish banquet, all in the throne room of the former czars. It's beginning to look like this is a modern-day czar, is it not? We've had Putinism for the past 12 years, and we're now set for another six.
Or, as he hopes, 12. I think the remarkable thing about this inauguration is not what was happening inside the hall. There's some things are interesting about what was happening inside the house as well. But what was happening outside, you know, Putin was driven to the inauguration ceremony through completely empty streets. Not a single person in sight. Because they had shut off even pedestrian access to the streets along his route. In addition, they had cordoned off the Kremlin. Some parts of the Kremlin just for the last couple of days. Some parts of the Kremlin actually for the last week. I was beginning to think that they were thinking that protesters had placed themselves, somewhere in a. In a hole in the Kremlin garden, and they wanted to make sure to seal off the garden far enough in advance that the protesters would starve themselves to death before the inauguration occurred. And then this was the inauguration of somebody who's absolutely terrified of his own people. So terrified, in fact, that none of them could even be seen along the route to the inauguration.
So if he's terrified of his own people, did he know what happened on the previous day on Sunday? Does he realize that there are people out there that don't like him?
He certainly realizes there are people out there who don't like him. But that's a great question. Does he realize what happened? If what he was getting was official police reports, then he got a thoroughly distorted picture. He was probably told that there were 8,000 protesters there, although it seemed there were 50,000. That's a police leak. The official police estimate was 8,000. The police leak was 50,000. And the organizer's estimate was 100,000. I would say I can tell you it was a hell of a lot of people. It certainly wasn't 8,000 people. I think he was probably told that there was violence. He was probably told that the violence was incited by the protesters. Which I don't think is true. I think that the violence was incited by the riot police. But again, what's interesting is that the violence that took place yesterday, and as a result, about 20 people were injured, at least one person severely, and 620 people were arrested. I mean, this was huge, and this went on for several hours. And that was just history. Today we had a whole new day. What I think was interesting about what happened yesterday was that part of the reason it happened, part of the reason there was so much violence, was that the Moscow police were under pressure from the Kremlin to put down the protests by means necessary. And where the Moscow police actually would have probably done their job and made sure that the protests went off peacefully, being completely constrained and physically, among other things, constrained by Kremlin forces, but ultimately forced to engage in violence.
Well, it seems that Putin's spokespeople are already condemning the violence and saying that this, you know, indicates that the movement has changed. It's no longer a peaceful protest, that there are subversives and revolutionaries. Does that portend to something worse? In other words, this will become an excuse for further crackdowns?
I think that's extremely likely. I mean, I think Putin is going down the road of tightening the screws. And yes, I think we're probably going to see measures, you know, either banning public gatherings altogether or somehow restricting them severely.
Again, I'm speaking with Masha Gessen, a journalist and author of several books. Her latest is The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. Prominent activists were, of course, arrested yesterday, Alexei Navalny, Sergei Udaltsov, and, of course, Boris Nemtsov. This has become a ritual, hasn't it? They pay the 1,000-ruble fine, constant intimidation. What's the sense of this protest? Well, give me a sense of the character of this protest, because I'm reading press reports from the BBC and other places suggesting that you have the kind of new nomenclature of this gangster capitalist clique regulated by the KGB that run the country, and then you have the vast sort of detached narod, the rest of the country that's sort of not paying attention, and then you've got a rising middle-class, professional class that's the heart of this protest movement. What's your characterization of the protest movement?
Okay, first of all, this whole middle class, professional class as the heart of the protest movement really makes me mad, and it makes me especially mad after yesterday's protest. And, you know, I'll be blunt, I haven't slept in 48 hours, so I'll be very direct. Basically, what happened yesterday was that, I was among the organizers of today's protest, and sort of I cooperated with the organizers of yesterday's protest. We really thought that it was going to be about 5,000 people, and at least 50,000 people showed up. We didn't know who these people were. They were not, you know, our Facebook friends. They were not the people that we hang out with at cafes. They were people who, a lot of whom, had been from other cities to take part in a protest to use what they perceived as their last chance to tell Putin that he was not their president, that they had not elected him. They were not, the wealthy urbanites from Moscow. They were the really, you know, gritty, ordinary street activists from cities all over the country. And while the Moscow organizers, the prominent people like Nemtsov, Udaltsov, and Navalny, got off with a 1,000-ruble, that's about $30 fine. Several hundred of those people from other cities are still in jails in Moscow, and their families don't know where they are. There are a lot of people running around the city today, trying to figure out who's where and who needs to be notified about people who are behind bars in Moscow. A lot of those people are kids. The two 16-year-olds from St. Petersburg, for example, that we're trying to locate, we know that they were the protesters, we know that they were detained, and then we can't find any trace of them after that. Again, this is not the rising middle class. This is sort of your classic, extremely broad-based street protest. Now, in addition to the 620 people who were detained yesterday, almost 500 people were detained today, and that's not all. I mean, we'll probably pass 500 by the end of the day, because the tensions continue. It started this morning with perfectly peaceful protests. People just went out into the streets. I mean, this is a protest that I was one of the organizers for. And what we suggest that people do is just come out into the streets of the city if they didn't want to get arrested. This was the thing. If you don't want to get arrested, don't take part in the radical protest. Just come out with a white ribbon and walk around. Nobody can detain you for wearing a white ribbon with us. Well, almost 700 people have been detained today for wearing white ribbons on their clothing. Nothing else.
Tell me about the symbolism of the white ribbon.
The white ribbon is a symbol that emerged last fall after the street protests broke out against the rigged parliamentary elections in December. Someone suggested, actually several people simultaneously seemed to suggest that white would be a good color to symbolize purity, to symbolize honesty, to symbolize the inclusion of all sorts of political beliefs. So this is the white ribbon to symbolize the movement for fair elections. We didn't get fair elections. We don't expect to get fair elections. So it's sort of morphed into a symbol of honesty and purity and something that is clearly opposed to what the current regime is.
I imagine, Marcia Gessen, the thing that Putin fears most is a kind of orange revolution in Russia itself.
Right. I mean, we're not going to get an orange revolution because the orange revolution in Ukraine, it refers to the 2004 sustained protest that went on for, I think, 2.5 months that in response to a rigged election of the Ukrainian president. That resulted in a re-election and the election of a popular candidate, but the Ukrainian Supreme Court played a key role in the Orange Revolution. It was when the street protests sort of pushed the issue, the court took it up and ruled on it. And this was possible because Ukraine at the time, even though it had a president with authoritarian tendencies and it did have rigged elections, it still had a parliament that had a discussion going on, and it still had at least a quasi-independent judiciary. Russia doesn't have any of that. All of that has been annihilated by Putin in the last 12 years. So what we're facing is something quite different. What we're facing is building those institutions back from the ground up, trying to build an independent judiciary where it has been incinerated, trying to foment a conversation in parliament where parliament has really grown used to thinking of itself as a rubber stamping body. It's not going to be as fast as the Orange Revolution. I do think it's going to be as effective, and I think it's going to be quite as catastrophic for Putin, but it's going to take at least a couple of years.
And it will be what I guess is called people power. This is completely bottom-up and spontaneous, and it's across all classes.
Absolutely. That's the key thing to understand about Russian protests, and that's why this whole business about the middle-class protests makes me mad. Because what we've seen time and again, and what we especially saw yesterday, is that it is people from all walks of life, from all over Russia, from all income levels, and all ages, who are really fed up with living under this regime.
But they're facing another 12 years of increased authoritarianism, cronyism, systematic corruption, and drift towards, something that resembles a sort of nationalism, fascism. I don't quite know how to characterize it, but give us your worst fears, Marcia Gessen.
Whether Putin sincerely believes that the KGB was the best thing that was ever invented, and what he really wants to do is turn Russia into the KGB, which means a closed system that is vertically integrated, that is ruled like a military organization by one person. He's made great strides in that direction. He's really made Russia resemble the KGB in some key ways. But he no longer has the cooperation of the Russian people. So, like any closed system, it looks very solid, but inside it's extremely fragile. We've seen dictatorships collapse all over the world. It always seems like they collapse in a single moment. That's not really how it happens. What happens is that the bottom of the pyramid is sort of taken out by people who suddenly realize that the regime is no longer legitimate, or was never legitimate. That's what's happened in Russia. The process of sort of taking apart the lowest rung of the pyramid so that the top collapses will take a little bit of time. But that process is inexorable. It's underway, it's unstoppable, and it's going to happen.
But when you say he's turning the country, or has turned the country, into the KGB and will do so even more in the 6 to 12 years that he's got ahead of him, it's a kind of KGB incorporated, isn't it? It's a KGB with capitalism. And I'm wondering, is there any vulnerability in that regard, in the way that capitalism is changing China as well? Or is this can he control capitalism and therefore regulate them and make sure they behave?
Well, Russian capitalism is a very particular sort because it's really what we're talking about is oil and gas. And that's a little bit different from manufacturing and from building up a number of different companies and creating a diverse economy, which at some point would probably start to conflict with such a closed structure as Putin has erected. Unfortunately, that's not the case for a country that survives solely on oil and gas exports, which is a fair characterization of the Russian economy at this point.
And Putin pretty much controls it, doesn't he? Through his cronies.
And Putin pretty much controls it.
Yeah. So
the flip side of it is that oil prices aren't going to keep growing forever. I mean, yes, we said that 7 years ago. We said, you know, we couldn't imagine that oil prices were going to be $50 a barrel forever. Now, they've gone up as high as $120. But still, they're not going to keep growing forever. At some point or another, they will at least stop growing. Mm-hmm. And that's when the Russian economy will stumble badly.
So what about the people that showed up to celebrate Putin's inauguration? Gorbachev was in the audience, along with Silvio Berlusconi. Of course, they're friends, a strange liaison there. Is there any possibility of some international ostracism? If Putin is sensitive to how Russians feel about him, I assume he's very sensitive to how the rest of the world sees him. And your book is very courageous, The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin, in as much as it finally tells the truth and cuts away all of the equivocation about who this man really is, a small man who's basically a petty thug who has managed to take over this, you know, destroy the promise of freedom in a country that has not experienced too much freedom in its the last God knows how many years.
Right. Thank you. That was exactly what I was trying to say. The inauguration is the guest list is interesting to ponder because, of course, you know, the foreign heads of state were not invited, and I think part of the reason they weren't invited was because of the pervasive fear of what would happen on inauguration day, because of the fear of protests, and because of a less sort of well-formed fear, just a general fear and anxiety. So the only people invited were, at the time, French President Sarkozy and Berlusconi and former German German leader Gerhard Schröder. Schröder and Berlusconi came, I believe. Sarkozy had instead of. Other than that, it was the Russian elite and that points to just how isolated the Russian regime has become and how isolated the country has become, how provincial it has become. Now, is Putin sensitive to what the West thinks of him? No, but not to an extent. I mean, he wants to be feared. He wants to be perceived in ways that Soviet leaders were perceived, as somebody to be contended with and somebody who's big and scary. But at the same time, he also keeps his money in the West, as do all of his cronies. And so if Western leaders not only start to look at what's really going on in Russia, not only start to criticize what's going on in Russia, but start instituting legislation that bans entry and that freezes the accounts of corrupt Putin officials, that, I think, will be a very effective measure.
Well, Masha Gessen, I'm very grateful that you're able to stay up so late to talk to us and to give us a first-hand account of what happened both on Sunday and today with the inauguration, the protests on Sundays, and continuing today, and the inauguration of Putin and the extent to which you were one of the organizers of these protests. It's a pleasure to talk with you, and we're very grateful.
Thank you very much for calling.
Again, I've been speaking with Masha Gessen, who's a journalist and author of several books. She's contributed to Vanity Fair, The New Republic, Granta, and Slate. And she is the author of the new book, The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. Back in the U.S. SSR. Well, the delivery girls really.